This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Swuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Hundreds of Kenyan protesters took to the streets again Monday, demanding major reforms in the country's electoral commission. Police responded by firing tear gas canisters and water cannons to force them to disperse.
That's VOA's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details coming up.
Also, 9 million people in the Lake Chad region are food insecure due to Boko Haram insurgency, and a major summit on Libya is held to support the new government of national accord.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the UN says more than 9 million people in the Lake Chad region are in urgent need of food aid. It blames the food insecurity on the widespread displacement caused by the Boko Haram insurgency in northeast Nigeria. It says half of them face chronic food insecurity and malnutrition. The Lake Chad region includes parts of Nigeria, Chad, Niger, and Cameroon.
Also in Nigeria, the military says it has arrested members of a militant group calling itself the Niger Delta Avengers. The group says it is behind attacks on oil facilities and has vowed to damage the economy. Analysts say the attacks may signal renewed trouble in Nigeria's oil-producing Niger Delta region. Christine reports from Lagos.
The Nigerian military gave no further details about the arrest of members of the group, which says it was behind attacks on pipelines and offshore platforms. Those incidents have cut Nigeria's crude oil production by more than 500,000 barrels per day. The attacks are similar to the wave of bombings and kidnappings that rocked the Delta region from 2006 to 2009. That insurgency only ended when the government started an amnesty program that paid off militants and provided some job training. Associate analyst at Control Risks Consultancy, Lade Aguche, said it is unlikely the Avengers marked the start of a full-fledged insurgency, but she warned that militants were likely planning more attacks.
What we have seen is that militants have been regrouping in light of tough socioeconomic conditions, some of which have been brought about by the global fall in oil prices, and the Niger Delta Avengers are one of such groups.
On its website, the group lists a range of demands, including an extension of an amnesty program and the cleanup of areas polluted by oil spills. If they do not get their way, they threaten to zero the economy. Aguche said their discontent likely stems from not only job cuts in the petroleum industry brought by the global drop in oil prices, but also by the inability of successive governments to improve livelihoods for poor communities in the oil-rich Delta.
Lack of development in the region is certainly fueling the perception that the government is focused on oil production to the detriment of community welfare.
Previous insurgencies relied on the support of local communities. Some local leaders who spoke to VOA said they were uneasy about the Niger Delta Avengers' tactics. Elikute Makale is community chieftain of the Gbaramatu Kingdom, the site of several pipeline attacks. Makale said he disapproved of the targeting of oil facilities.
That is our national economy. And when our national economies are affected, we all are affected.
Nigeria plans to end its amnesty program for Niger Delta militants by 2018. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
In Kenya, hundreds of protesters took to the streets again today, demanding major reforms in the country's electoral commission. Police fired tear gas and water cannons to force them to disperse. VOA's Jill Craig reports from Nairobi.
No election! No election!
For the third Monday in a month, protesters gathered outside Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission in Nairobi to demand the commission members resign. Protests also took place in western Kenya. The protesters, most of whom are supporters of the opposition CORD coalition, accuse the IEBC of favoring the ruling Jubilee coalition. They say the commission is unable to conduct free, fair, and transparent elections. James Orengo is a Kenyan senator with CORD who led the crowd in chanting "No reforms, no elections." He says no fair elections can be held with the current electoral commission in place.
But we are determined to make sure that, you know, if there's going to be an election at all, then that elections must be held in terms set out by the Kenyan Constitution, which says the elections must be free and fair, an election where every vote counts, and that, you know, everybody has been given an opportunity to register as a voter.
The demonstration Monday never proceeded to speeches, as the police began firing tear gas and water cannons into the crowd to order protesters to disperse. Orengo says one protester, who he accompanied to a hospital, was shot by police with a live bullet. Ali Hassan owns a restaurant in the building where the IEBC is based and says he was victimized by both protesters and the police.
The protesters, you know, broke into my restaurant. They have vandalized everything. And the police also threw live tear gas inside the restaurant, into the kitchen.
Orengo disputes the protesters were unruly.
No, that is propaganda. That is propaganda. All our protesters, all our people were carrying twigs. They were told to carry twigs or carry handkerchiefs.
Orengo says that the protests will continue every Monday until the government decides to sit down with the opposition and engage in meaningful dialogue about the electoral process. Kenya is scheduled to hold presidential and parliamentary elections in August 2017. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The United States, EU, and African nations met in the Austrian capital Vienna today to discuss the ongoing chaos in Libya and the growing threat of Islamic State militants. They say they are ready to support Libya's struggling new government of national accord with the weapons it needs to fight extremists. The summit was co-chaired by U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and Italian Foreign Minister Paolo Gentiloni. Malta, Chad, Sudan, Algeria, China, Turkey, Niger, and the African Union and the UN were also invited to attend the meeting. The turmoil that followed the fall of leader Muammar Gaddafi in 2011 led to the rise of many militias and allowed Islamic State to gain a foothold. Reporter Kerry Skyring is in Vienna. He spoke to VOA's Jody Capua about Secretary Kerry's comments after the meeting.
Well, he's emphasizing the importance of the international solidarity and the people who are in this room today for Libya. He spoke about the difficulties that Libya has gone through, the chaos, and the need now for solidarity, both outside in the international community and within Libya in the government of national accord.
Everyone has seen the hardships that are being felt by the Libyan citizens in all regions and by members of every clan and every tribe in Libya. And they have witnessed the emergence of a new threat to their country's future in the form of the terrorists who are affiliated with Daesh. As the communique that we produced earlier makes clear, it is imperative to put the international community's full weight behind the Government of National Accord. And the GNA is the only entity that can unify the country and address the economic crisis and humanitarian suffering.
I guess one of the most important parts is the commitment now to provide military aid, arms to Libya. Now, that requires a lifting of sanctions, but that appears to be the way forward. Providing certain steps are taken within Libya to cement the unity of the government.
So I assume this is directed towards the Islamic State militants in Libya.
Not only the Islamic State militants. John Kerry wasn't specific on this, but it's certainly one of the main concerns of both the United States and Europe, is the establishment of Islamic State militants in the east of Libya, particularly on the coast, where Europe fears that terrorist attacks could be launched. But there are rebel groups within Libya, and the military aid and training and intelligence is going to be provided to the government of National Accord. Then that means, in theory, it could be used against other rebels within Libya who oppose the government. So that's still to be made clear.
Was any mention made of financial aid?
Yes, there is financial aid coming up for Libya. A whole range of aid measures have been alluded to without any specific details. So because there were so many foreign ministers here and so many representatives from around the region who have vested interest in seeing Libya stabilized, it seems that there are some commitments coming forward in providing aid to Libya.
Of course, Libya has been a launching point for many migrants and refugees heading for Europe. Do you know whether that issue was addressed?
It was due to be addressed. It wasn't referred to directly by your Secretary of State, but Europe, and particularly Italy, the Italian foreign minister was co-chairing this meeting with John Kerry. So inevitably, this would have been discussed within the meeting. It was certainly on the agenda, because if they are linking the stabilization of the Libyan government and Libyan society with a reduction in the flow of refugees leaving the coast of Libya trying to come to Europe, that was one of the great hopes of this meeting.
That's reporter Kerry Skyring from Vienna. He spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
Coming up on 16 Minutes Past the Hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Senior European Union and Turkish officials are meeting to rescue the EU visa deal. The visa issue is part of the agreement that calls on Turkey to restrict the flow of migrants and refugees to Europe. Since the ousting of Turkish Prime Minister by President Erdogan, the deal has started to unravel with increasingly harsh rhetoric from both sides. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
An international students' meeting Sunday was the latest venue for Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to slam Brussels, declaring Turkey's received 3 million refugees while the European Union has just looked on. Friday, he said the European Union cares more about dogs and gay rights than the plight of Syrian refugees. The relentless rhetoric comes as the European Union insists Turkey harmonises anti-terror laws in order to secure visa-free travel to European countries. Visa-free travel, a long-time wish of Turkey's AKP government, was promised by Brussels in exchange for Turkey taking back migrants who entered Europe from its territory. The agreement, heralded as a new chapter in Turkish EU relations, is in deep trouble, says political consultant Attila Yeşilada of Global Source Partners.
The drive to reintegrate with EU is over. He's not going to amend the anti-terror law to get the visa waiver. In fact, we may anticipate a crisis because one of the leading AKP members, Burhan Kuzu, said we should send all the Syrian refugees to Europe. So I anticipate a crisis with EU.
One pro-government Turkish newspaper told migrants, get your suitcases ready. Erdogan insists rather than curtailing the anti-terror laws, they need to be expanded, with Turkey facing twin terror threats of Kurdish rebels and Islamic State. But political columnist Kadri Gusel of Cumhuriyet newspaper and Al Monitor website says the EU deal is a victim of tensions between the president and his former prime minister Ahmet Davutoğlu.
They did their best to offer Davutoğlu a success story in the deal of this refugee crisis. And now, as Erdogan doesn't like any success scored by others than himself, he is now trying to kill it in a politically legitimate way.
Erdogan ousted his prime minister earlier this month, and Davutoğlu is to be replaced by the AKP Party Congress this month. Observers say EU officials' praise of Davutoğlu while criticising Erdogan only further irked the Turkish president, sealing the prime minister's fate. Pro-president newspaper columnists have been attacking the migrant deal and accusing the European Union of tricking Davutoğlu. EU officials are trying hard to resolve the impasse. Since the migrant deal was agreed to, there has been a 90% drop in migrants entering Greece from Turkey. Analysts say Erdogan believes a leverage on the migrant issue means he can dictate terms. But consultant Yeşilada warns that leverage may be short-lived.
The Europeans, even though this is denied by German foreign ministry, are planning to intern Syrian refugees on the Greek islands and then process them there. They are going to reroute the 6 billion euro aid to Greece, and we're going to see another freeze on accession talks. And probably we're going to see Europe coming down very hard on human rights abuses in Turkey, and Turkey slowly mutating into a pariah in the Western world.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel, one of the architects of the migrant deal and its main supporter, is expected to meet with her Turkish counterpart while attending next week's UN Humanitarian Summit in Istanbul. Observers say the meeting could offer the last chance to save the migrant deal, an agreement critics are increasingly accusing Brussels of sacrificing its human rights principles for. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
In other migrant-related news, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights of Migrants has criticized the European Union's response to the refugee crisis. The Associated Press says François Crépeau spent the day visiting detention centers and migrant camps in Greece. He says there's been a lack of vision on the part of the EU. He also called for strong measures to ensure legal accountability in the deal between Greece and Turkey. Any refugees who arrived in Greece since March 20th are being detained and eventually sent back to Turkey, but it's been a very slow process so far.
More than 1,500 Burundians have been deported from neighboring Rwanda since last Friday. Rwandan authorities say those who were deported were in the country illegally. Moses Habyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
Relations between Burundi and Rwanda have deteriorated since last year. Burundi accuses Rwanda of destabilizing the country. The Rwandan government denies the allegation, saying that Bujumbura is responsible for its own problems. With a continued diplomatic rows between the two countries, Kigali has deported more than 1,500 Burundians. Rwandan authorities say Burundians who did not have proper documents were only ones deported. Melchior Nangwahaumba is the governor of Kirundo, where many returned from Rwanda. Melchior says that the local Rwandan administrators and the residents held a meeting and said that they don't want to see any Burundian nationals anymore. He says even if you have a visa or you have been regularizing your stay in Rwanda, all they did was to be taken to the refugee camps. Normally, the local communities were friendly, but now seems like things are changing, he added. While the deportation of Burundians who have been living and working in Rwanda is seen as unfair in Burundi, Rwanda says that the deportations were nothing other than the routine control of non-Rwandans who live in the country without legalizing their stay. Serafine Mukantabana, the Rwandan minister in charge of refugees, told the AFP that there are a number of Burundians who crossed the neighboring Rwanda without having the legal travel documents. More than 300,000 Burundians have fled the violence that began in April last year to neighboring countries, including Rwanda. The violence began after President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek for a third term, which opponents called unconstitutional. Last week, Burundi commemorated 1 year anniversary of the failed coup. Burundi presidential adviser Willy Nyamitwe released a memorandum on what the government calls Rwandan aggression on Burundi by allegedly supporting armed groups trying to destabilize the country. With a peace dialogue is set to resume late this month, the Burundi president has told the international community that the talks will also need to be held with Rwanda, put an end to the current political crisis. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Today marks the opening day of the Women Deliver Conference in Copenhagen, Denmark. It's an annual meeting of NGO leaders, policymakers, advocates, academics, grassroots activists, and others. They are meeting for 4 days to share strategies for helping girls and women meet critical challenges. VOA's Adam Phillips interviewed key participants at the meeting. Today, he speaks with Katja Iverson, the organization's CEO. She explains what the conference is all about.
Women Deliver is an advocacy organization, and we advocate for the health, rights, and well-being of girls and women around the globe. We work to enhance investments, both political and financial, in girls and women because we know that is where change will come from.
Why has change come from there? I mean, you could many ways you can slice the pie. Why women per se?
When you visit a continent like Africa, you can see women carry that continent on their heads and on their shoulders. They deliver for their families, for their communities, and for their societies. We know that when you invest in girls and women, there's a ripple effect that goes way beyond the individual. It benefits the children, the chance for survival is much better, the chance for education is much better, it benefits the communities, and it benefits really down to GDP and the economic outcome of a country.
Okay, tell me a little bit about this conference and sort of the range of people who will be there, some of the numbers, and kind of what are the areas of concern?
From the 16th to the 19th of May, the whole world will descend on Copenhagen, where we will have the largest conference for more than 10 years on the health, rights, and well-being of girls and women. There will be participants from 162 countries, everything from heads of states and ministers of various kinds to royals and heads of UN agencies to the change makers from communities who are really making change happen every day. The focus of the conference will be on how do we make development and how do we particularly make the new sustainable development goals matter most for girls and women. Because when we get that in play, that's where progress will come from.
Give me a little bit of the range of the issues that altogether make up this sort of wholesome mosaic you're trying to achieve.
Women deliver much more than babies. They deliver for everybody. But there are areas that need serious investment. It is health, and that's including reproductive health, and women's access to, for example, contraception and not to die in childbirth. It is education beyond primary education and beyond just going to school. It is to combat violence we see against women systematically across the world. And then, of course, it is economic empowerment, access to a bank account, access to land and resources. Women deliver comes from a health background and of course, maternal health, reproductive health. But we cannot only look at that. We have to look at women as whole beings and not just body parts or diseases. So we do look a lot at gender equality, education, women's access to resources, including land, because that is also areas where we see so great inequalities. Women only own about 2% of all agricultural land in Africa, but they produce between 60 and 80% of the produce. And we also see that when women own land, the families survive and thrive, and so does societies much better. So it is all integrated. We can't talk about women's health without talking about women's rights and status in society. We see how education benefits health. We see how women's economic empowerment makes everybody prosper. So integration is key. And we will see that at the Women Deliver Conference in Copenhagen to have the different groups there. There will be private sector. There will be the United Nations. There will be governments. There will be activists. There will be journalists. There will be academic. And everybody needs to be there. It can't be business as usual. We need to focus on the solutions. We need to focus not on the if and the why, but the how and the now. The Women Deliver Conference is not a woman's conference. It is an everybody's conference.
If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
And if she's not healthy and survive, the family won't thrive.
That was Katja Iversen, CEO of Women Deliver, a global organization dedicated to the health, rights, and well-being of girls and women. She spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing the Voice of America. Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss whether there's a need for a fundamental change in U.S.-Africa relations.
Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they discuss U.S.-Africa relations next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.